Herzlich willkommen zu Women Hit Harder, dem Female Power Podcast mit Julia Dorni. Im Gespräch mit starken Persönlichkeiten aus Sport, Wirtschaft und dem Leben.
Hello everybody, this is Julia Dorni, Women Hit Harder, the Female Power Podcast. And this is my today's guest, Jens van Tricht, who is a great writer. Like a really great writer. He just wrote the book in September as of 2019, Why is Feminism So Good for Men? And today I would like to talk to you about all the issues with men and masculinity and the masculinity. Oh my God, my tongue is broken. Masculinity cold and feminism and female power and all that kind of stuff. So hi, Jens.
Hi, Julia.
I'm so happy that we finally managed to talk to each other through Skype, although we have this corona crisis,
yeah.
Which is everybody talking about. And you just mentioned that you've been in self-quarantine.
Actually, I wish I would feel good enough to do things like that. I have been trying to keep up with my day-to-day work. You introduced me as a writer. And yes, it's true, I wrote a book, but I did so actually as a part of my work as an activist. I have a foundation, I have a team to work with, we have projects. So I try to keep things running while also trying to recover.
I know, I just said it on purpose with writing, because that's like the schedule a lot of people put you in, right? And we met in Berlin, this is like something you don't just want to be a writer. You are like more than this. You're an activist. You put all your strengths into really good things. You empower women. You give them a voice. You also explain why it's so important to men to actually, you know, soak it in, the feminism thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, true. But yeah, so I think I'm multi-sided.
Which is so good.
Yeah. In Berlin, I was introduced as a forscher, as a researcher, which you could say is like part of what I do as well. I try to research ways to get men and boys engaged in feminism or in the achievement of feminist goals. I studied gender studies, women's studies. I specialized in men and masculinities, and I try to bridge the gap between the theoretical activists' intellectual knowledge to the practice of boys and men and people and organizations working with them. And the book has been kind of a summary of my 25 years engagement in this field, the lessons I learned as a person, as a human, as a man, as an activist, as a scholar, in an NGO. And now these weeks of isolation, they are kind of inspiring, but they're also very frightening in a way. I think it's really good to acknowledge that everything that's going on is really scary as well, and that it's difficult to sit inside and wait for the things to evolve and develop without being able to do much about it apart from staying put and connecting like this through internet. Which is great that it's possible. Yeah, but it's really strange and fascinating, but also very scary times. Yeah.
Well, I have to admit, just saying that, I would have loved to meet and talk to you in person in Amsterdam, in Holland, in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Well, but we have to take it like it is, I guess. And, you know, for me personally, it was so bad when I just, I don't know, walked on the street, like getting groceries or whatever, you know, and then people are taking a big distance to you because they care about you. And I don't know how to say it. It felt so weird. And I wish, like, oh my God, I hope this is going to end when it gets back to normal. Because right now this is so scary that people take distance from me on purpose.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is something I really don't want.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Actually, now you make me wonder how things are in Germany, in Berlin, because I hear that at least the things don't seem to get as bad as in the Netherlands and some other countries yet. But I understand that you also practice the physical distancing.
especially for me as an athlete, you know, I cannot go to my gym. I cannot fight anywhere. Yeah. I can just, you know, go for a run, do indoor sports or, well, before it was that bad, I could still use the playgrounds of Berlin. No, this is all covered in, you know, white and red tape.
Yeah. Wow. It's crazy. Yeah.
It feels like ghost town.
Wow.
Well, yeah. Let's not talk about this corona I'm like, so like, it's just too much. It's just too much information about corona and nobody really talks about other nice stuff. There's so many sweet things going on in life and we just talk about this, you know, it makes me, you know,
so
what
let's talk about the sweet things. And let's say that when we get the possibility again, let's meet in Amsterdam after all.
Amsterdam actually has a really good gin, the Wordings gin.
Really?
We'll do so. No, let's talk about your experiences. We just mentioned it earlier that you had a lot of experience in case of, you know, in your field of the masculinity and the man and your studies and feminism and all that. So you said the book is more a summary of your own experiences. Did I get that right?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's a summary. It's an intervention also. It's a contribution to the work I do. I don't know. So, I mean, it's clear that in the past 10 years or so, there is a growing momentum of the engagement between boys and men and feminism from both sides. There is more men speaking out in favor of equal rights, women's rights, gender equality, and all those things. And I also see that the women's movement, LGBT movement, etc., get more connected, and there is a broader gender justice movement. Also, on a global perspective, we see that people of all kinds are getting more together to work for gender equality and gender justice. And for me, this has been a kind of homecoming. Maybe I should tell you about, like, 2009, after many years of feeling quite isolated, working on these issues, doing a project here, project there, meeting some people every now and then with similar interests and activities. And then in 2009, suddenly I found out about Men Engage, which is a global movement for gender justice, engaging boys and men in this struggle. And then suddenly I was, from one moment to the other, I was first in a meeting in Stockholm with 125 like-minded people. Then I was in Rio de Janeiro with 450 people from like 80 countries. And then a few years ago, 6 years ago already, in 2014, in Delhi, there were more than 1,000 people from more than 100 countries. So suddenly there was a movement of people and organizations doing what I wanted to do, what I tried to do, what I had been doing, but very much in the margins. And it gives me hope. You said, let's look at the nice and sweet things. It gives me hope to see that people are more and more seeing that this is something we need to do together, that boys and men are more and more taking their responsibility and also seeing that it's not just something they have to sacrifice, but that there is a lot to gain, that they have a world to gain in creating this better world for women, for children, for other men, for themselves.
May I ask you what you meant when you said sacrificing?
Well, many men think that they lose when women get treated equally. So they think they have to sacrifice. And of course, men will need to give up their privilege. Their undeserved
privilege
of being taken seriously more, of getting paid more, of having more power in many ways. There are so many privileges. I think it's important to acknowledge that this world makes unjust divisions between men and women, also between men and women of many different kinds. It's an intersectional challenge that we face. So it's not just about men and women, it's about race and class and education and country of birth, etc. there's about ability, there is many different dimensions of social injustice interplaying together to create the world we live in. And it is time to do something about that. And it is time that those intersectionalities, those intersections that actually are part of the problem, that create the problem, the fact that masculinity and whiteness and heterosexuality are the norms that we apply to all humans, that these create the positions of power and privilege, and that these are actually the causes of the injustice, and that we need to do something about it. So it is clear that men have to give up their undeserved positions of power and privilege and preference. So there is a sacrifice there, but then doing this opens up so many other dimensions of gain in the relation of men with themselves to start with, in the relation of men with other men, the relation of men with women, with children, with their partners, with the world, with whatever we consider to be meaningful. So I do believe there is not just a win-win situation, but a win versus multiple win situation. If we leave out the one-dimensional thinking of masculinity as it is and has been, if we leave that aside and we allow men to become more human, then a whole new world is possible.
Like, one thing for sure is that men were pretty much raised, and that all over the world, you're not allowed to cry. You're not allowed to show your emotions. You cannot be weak. This is a girl thing. You can't do it. You can't play with dolls. You have your cars and your ball, right? Kind of stuff like that. Like, why did this happen overall in the world? I don't get it myself. Is it easier to think that way? Like, one-dimensional?
I find the question why things have happened always difficult to answer, because I know that there is a big risk in projecting the logic from now on whatever imaginary past. I think it's very interesting to see how we do this in day-to-day life every time again. And the boys don't cry motto, I think, actually comes from what is very fundamental in most of contemporary definitions of masculinity as not feminine. So lesson one for boys and men to learn to be a real man is you should not be feminine. You should not be like or be associated with or even risk being associated with women or femininity. And there is a dichotomy of values, of characteristics that we attach to women and men in cultural ideas and practices of masculinity and femininity that are quite oppositional, that we teach men really to stay away from everything that might be associated with femininity, and crying, being weak, being insecure, being frightened or scared or not knowing what to do, being insecure. All those things we think of as not masculine, but actually we think of them as feminine. So I do believe, in fact, that most current definitions of masculinity, the dominant, the traditional definitions of masculinity, they have a strong foundation in what is actually misogyny. There is a real, what is the word? I wouldn't say hatred of femininity and women. Maybe there is, but I would say there is, we learn to despise women and femininity, and which is actually, sorry, I'm just going on with my mansplaining now.
No, this is really good. I like exercise, of course I do too, but I mean, I love examples. If you have any example, just, yeah.
Well, I think with the crisis now, with the Corona crisis, it's really interesting to see. I'm not sure if the same is happening in Germany, but I assume that there has been a kind of distinction between vital and non-vital professions. It is interesting to see now that most of the things we call vital professions, or many of them, are those professions done by women. Very undervalued, underpaid jobs. And I mean, this is not just happening now, it becomes visible now, but actually our whole society is based on the reproductive labor carried out by mostly women in the world. And the whole world wouldn't function. So all the production, all the careers, all the power, all the status, all the money that is being made by men, predominantly by men in society, it is actually based on the unpaid or underpaid reproductive labor mostly carried out by women. And maybe this is also interesting then to see where the trouble is for men and masculinity, or for patriarchy, that we are so dependent on those things that we learn to despise. So I can be hopeful now that this crisis will reveal to us those things that are really worthy, that are really valuable, that we need, that we can't do without, that are really carrying our whole society, our humanity, the world we live in. I hope so.
How did men, I just say it in general now, how did men react on your book? A lot of prejudices, or how was, yeah, I would, tell me.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think let's say men are very diverse and complex and contradictory and mysterious. So I can't say how men in general have responded. I think I can say that the way men and women have responded to the book is actually quite similar to the way they have been responding to my work in the past years and decades, which was also one reason to write the book. I wrote the book not for men in general, but I wrote the book for those men who feel something isn't right. They want to do something about it. Maybe in some way I tried to write the book that I would have liked to find myself when I started off with all this. I wanted to translate the academic and activist insights to a broader audience. And I think it functioned for that. I wonder, it would actually be interesting to have a research on who have been the buyers and the readers. I expect that, it would be good if 1/3 of the readers have been men. This is like on average what appears to be a good score in meetings also, even when they are about men and gender equality or men and feminism. 1/3 of men in the audience is a good score. And of course, I mean, there is a lot of men in the world who think this is not about them, or who think this is against them. And those reactions have been there, and they have been there before, and they range from disqualifying me because I'm not a real man according to their definitions, so they shouldn't take me seriously. I'll probably be gay or a mommy's boy or whatever. I'm a gender traitor. I'm taking side with the enemy. I'm against men. I'm part of the problem of feminism gone too far. I think that is kind of the range that's happening. But I'm getting quite a lot of positive responses from men who feel this is helpful for them to orient themselves in the field of gender and masculinity issues, and whether they become an activist or just give it a place in their own lives, or they do something in their study or professionally with it. I mean, the book has not been what you call that, massively bought. Well, how would you call it in English? It's not been on top of all the lists. I don't know.
Not
in Germany,
yet.
Actually.
Not yet.
Not yet. Now, after this, it will be better. And you mentioned it was launched in September last year, but actually, it was published in 2018 in the Netherlands already. And last year,
the translation in German was published.
The translation to Germany was last year, and this year it will be published in Egypt in Arabic.
And ooh, that's
we
a
also,
tough thing.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, and there will be an English translation because a huge part of my work and network is internationally and has English as their main conversational language. So let's see how it works out with the book. Yeah,
it's really interesting that you really decided to publish it in the Arabic.
Well,
country.
I didn't decide it. There was a publisher there who bought the rights. So
even better.
Yeah. So I'm excited. Let's see now with Corona how things evolve. But they have the translation ready and they're waiting for a moment to publish. Yeah.
It's so great. Such a big.
Well, it's interesting. I mentioned Men Engage, and really there is a growing movement worldwide. So in many countries, also in the Middle Eastern and North African region, there is organizations working to engage boys and men in violence prevention, in sexual and reproductive health and rights, in family planning, in education, in welfare, in creating safe communities. So there is a growing movement, and I think this won't be stopped. So the next global Men Engage symposium will be in Kigali in Rwanda.
Wow.
In November this year. Yeah.
So you're actually traveling there?
Well, let's Corona Volente. Let's see what happens. But if I can, I definitely want to be there. Yeah.
Yeah. Going back to a thing you just said was the question, are you a real man? Oh my God. Are you a real man? What is this meant to be? You know, I don't get it. Like, what is a real man? For
yeah,
me, a real man
really...
is someone who's empathic and smart and humorous and kind and I don't know, just yeah.
But then actually you say a real man is a real human.
Yeah.
Because
man, women,
for me,
all human.
Yeah, I think the importance of really being a man or being a real man is really a huge part of the problem. So
absolutely.
And I don't know. I always go one step further than than most people can go with me. So when I say, "Oh, but caregiving and being empathetic, etc., can all be also be masculine traits," then they say, "Yes." So I'm a caring man, but then they don't want to call it care, but they want to, I don't know, be responsible. I really think we should doubt why it is so important to be a man or a woman in this world. Why are those labels so important? That
is it like Gucci or Prada or whatever, maybe? Big labels? I don't know. Maybe this is the label that people want. Because
something, yeah. It's the first distinction we make even before people are born. And we attach really a lot to that. So people who, I mean, yeah. It's interesting when... I think this is really an interesting question for everyone. And maybe the question is more important than the answer. But of course, my answer is it shouldn't matter so much. And as long as it matters so much, we're still stuck in the same problem. Because if we can have access to all our human qualities, whether we are used to calling them male or female or masculine or feminine, then we are fully human. So why would it still matter then to say, yes, but I have all these qualities, but I'm still a man. Don't doubt that. What is it then? Is it, I mean, I don't know. I really don't know why this is so important.
See, now I'm giving you an example. It happened to me, or it happens to me all the time, like the other way around. You are not a real woman. What the fuck? Are you kidding me? Yeah. Why? I have this chromosomes and I have this and that. And, you know, I just have this special hobby or like job, profession, whatever. I'm a mixed martial artist. I'm a journalist. I love martial arts. And what the fuck? I do like Star Wars. I do like cars. What's the matter? I'm still a woman.
Yeah. And then why is it so important for you to still be a woman?
I don't know. I never asked the question to myself, honestly.
No. I mean, I do agree with you that it shouldn't make the difference. And so I can very well understand that you claim that as a human and as a woman, you can be and do and like all these things, and that it shouldn't shake the definition of you as a woman. And at the same time, I think it's interesting to ask the question, why is it so important for us to be labeled man or woman? In the end, why? Yeah.
You know, Jens, let's talk about the key learnings from your book. I know it's kind of mean because you want people to read the book, and they will, of course, after they listen to the podcast, for sure. But just to like sum it up a little bit to make it like a top 10 key learnings, can we do that? Would you mind?
Let's try. Yeah. I think we spoke about quite some of these learnings already here. Yeah.
But like one sentence each key learning.
Yeah. So my book asks the question, but actually it is an answer already, of course, why feminism is good for men. So actually that's a statement, feminism is good for men. And I elaborate why this is the case. To spoil the conclusion in the last chapter or the before last chapter, I'm not really sure now, is to say what I said before, but line one, feminism is good for men because it changes their relation with themselves. Second, because it changes their relation with other men. Third, because it changes their relation with women. Fourth, because it changes their relation with children. Five, because it changes their relation with their partners of whatever kind. Six, because it changes their relation with the world. And I could add seven here, because it contributes to a better world, and that is good for everyone, including men. I elaborate some topics that I think actually are quite obvious. Violence is a huge topic when talking about men and masculinity. Actually, I wonder now how you see that from your professional and hobby side. But I mean, we teach boys and men that violence is something they should relate themselves to, that they should be able to perform, but also to suffer violence when needed for the protection of their honor, their family, their fatherland, or whatever. So we teach boys and men that violence is a masculine thing that they really should be able to do. We prefer men to be perpetrators over victims. So violence is really an issue that I elaborate on in the book. Sex and sexuality, and especially the dominance of heterosexuality, is really a thing that is important, and which I also think, I mean, so sorry, I'm skipping the 10 lines requirement now.
Which is good. It's good.
I mean, let it be clear that a world without violence would be good for men also. That's actually a quote by bell hooks I start with in the book, that the first act of violence that is carried out is against men themselves. They have to be violent against themselves, and they are violent against each other. With sexuality, I really also believe that even though in this world we can say that men are served much better in sexual needs and priorities and roles, etc., I think we can do so much better. I don't think most men actually get what they really need, but they get what they are thought that they might need or that would be a good cover up actually for many of the emotions that men are not allowed to have, because we learn to consider them as feminine or effeminate, so they are in the taboo box. So I think in sexual relations and in violence, we can improve a lot in the lives of men, and of course in the lives of women, in the relation between men and women in this world. I think this is very clear. We discussed before about the reproductive versus productive roles. So in caregiving, in allowing men to explore and develop and use the qualities that we need to relate to others, to care for others, to be cared for. I think really there is a treasure box hidden in men that we should invite them to open, because it will really enrichen their lives in so many ways, and it will really give new dimensions to their relationships, all those relationships I mentioned before. So let's say these are some of the things that I really think are worthwhile for men to explore, for men and women to explore, and also for our societies as institutions and as political social systems, as economic systems also to explore.
What I figured out from like personal experiences with like friends and my, you know, teammates or whatever, like the porn industry itself has a big impact on little boys or growing up boys, because the way the men and the women sleep with each other, which they don't do, they really fuck each other hard, and on like way I cannot really enjoy. I mean, there are some which are really nice, like to watch, where the women are on like a higher level, they're be treated like humans, not like as meat, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the young boys, they see it and they think this is the way we should do it, which is so wrong.
Yeah.
This is something I've always asked myself, why is the industry doing it? Or why are girls and women allowing them to do the way they do it? I mean, sex is something really nice. It's could be the best thing on earth, maybe. But why are some women just allowing them to do it? I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. You ask, why are the women allowing them to do it? And I will leave it up to you and other women maybe to ask or answer those questions.
But you are a real man.
Yeah, well, I think, I really think, I mean, there is a very thorough, but also difficult discussion in all the countries and also globally. Within the women's movement and also in Men Engage, about porn and prostitution and sex work, about sexuality and the active passive role of women, empowerment, regulations, and all these things. I think it is very important to question, critically examine the demand side of all this. Why is it that men need sex in the ways that it is provided now, or that relate? I mean, I totally agree that sex can be very nice and maybe the best thing in life. I also sometimes think when I see all this that it can also be very overrated. Sex comes in many different ways and can also be good in many different ways. Someone I know did a thesis on actually lesbian sexual relationships, and she talked about the parallels between food and sex, and she said, well, it can also just be a quick snack after going out, and it can also be a full romantic dinner with seven dishes or courses, whatever. and it can be everything in between and even beyond. But I do feel when I see the way porn and also prostitution, sex work are the place that these get in men's lives are in many ways at least problematic or part of problematic phenomena and relations and power structures also. So I think it would be good to explore what is the meaning of sex for men beyond just getting fucked hard and getting an orgasm, or maybe it's not even an orgasm, but it's just come. And I'm quite sure that actually most men also, maybe not just only, but also look for intimacy in ways that are considered not really masculine. So I think it would be really important to look at that, apart from really all the injustices that can be related to certain structures of porn production, of prostitution, of human trafficking. I mean, I see also the empowerment movement amongst women of feminist porn or porna or whatever. And I think it's really good that women claim these domains for themselves and create new ways of relating to this and to doing this and to reclaiming it. But I do think that the demand side of male sexuality, it's not just a natural phenomenon. That's the way it's often being talked about. Oh, men just have this uncontrollable need. But it's like with gender and masculinity, I think there is a lot of social, cultural norms, institutions, practices that create the demand, that create the ways men and women look at it now, look at themselves in these relations, in these roles, in these practices. So, yeah.
I think the porn stuff, sorry, I really would like to end it, but it's something it's really important to say and tell it to the audience, because the porn thing is people are not okay with their ordinary, I would call it ordinary, relationship. They think this is not enough. Like one person is mostly not enough. I need this and that, and I need a gangbang and a threesome and this, and I have this vision of doing this and that, and I want to be treated like this and that. So the industry is really living from all the visions people have and the dreams and the Vorlieben, which I don't know right now in English.
preferences.
The what?
I think the preferences.
The preferences, Vorlieben. Right. Yeah, preferences. Yeah. So yeah, this is a big deal. Yeah. And some people can't have real fun when they are sleeping with each other because the penetration is not enough. Just the imagination. This is crazy.
Sorry, now I miss what you're saying.
Sorry, I didn't want to make it a big topic, but I think maybe it is.
Yeah.
For example, you're sleeping with your partner, whatever, and it just doesn't feel right. Like not enough. You want more and more and more because you have watched all the porn, and you want sex with like this girl and this and that and her and she and maybe all together. This is something which is big. And some people can't have erections or because the brain is just something with the neuronal system.
Yeah, this is now you get to medical technology. I don't know. I mean, I know that this is of course why Viagra and other pharmaceutical help has got so popular. But I mean, I think in a way, it's also just a very capitalist logic. It has become a commodity. It's never enough. It's actually not feeding into our real needs. As a coach, I learned to ask, what is the question behind the question? And now we are only serving the very superficial question. Oh, I want more. I mean, when I eat chocolate, I also want more all the time. And when I go shopping, I want more all the time. When I earn money, I want more all the time. When I have sex, I want more all the time. But I think instead of the quantity, there is a quality dimension that we miss. And I really think we need to go in depth more. We need to ask ourselves, what do we really need? What is really meaningful in this life? And you wanted to look at the positive and the nice things happening. I do think even before and beyond the corona situation now, I do see that there is a growing awareness of many people that that we need more. I mean, people who have everything still keep looking for what is it all about? And people turn to whatever spiritual, personal growth practices that often also just work out like the same kind of capitalist commodity and quick fix. I do believe when, as humans, as humanity, we need really to go deep inside to look what it's all about.
And what is it, what you really need in life?
Well, I think I do need meaning. I think my whole life is, I mean, and I come from a privileged position, let that be clear. I mean, I'm exactly the white, straight, middle-class man that I put at the core of my social and political criticism, because I see how my kind of life and my position is the norm, and at the same time, how it is not enough, how it's not making happy. So I'm looking for meaning. I'm looking for connection. So actually, I thank you for asking the question, because now actually, chuck, I realized that on those six dimensions that I said feminism is good for men, I think this is where I found meaning in my quest through all these topics in the past, 25, 30 years. I find that it is really about a deeper connection with myself, with life in general, with people of all kinds. And in a way, asking the difficult questions has not made my life easy, but it has made it very intense and worthwhile. And it still continues doing so. Yeah.
I was just wondering, when I asked you this question, what I would answer. And I think for me, it's health.
Health.
Health. Not just for me, for my beloved ones, and for the planet.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that. And at the same time, I wonder then, okay, but is the... No, yeah. Mm.
But it's the thing, so, you know, people just take things too normal. This is just how it is. But in times of corona, they finally see, oh my God, this is just one health. And if I don't take care, I could be dead. I could be dying. I'm not part anymore of this planet, because I have to take care of myself. And this is something people underestimate. They never really ask that. They just see the travels, the things, the superficial stuff, food, whatever, sex, I don't know, going into bars, looking nice in pictures, creating the lives on like social media, but they never really ask behind.
Yeah, I agree very much. So thank you. And at the same time, I think, but it's an illusion to think that we can all stay healthy all the time. So there's also a question, how can we deal in a healthy way with the fact that we will all become unhealthy and die in the end? Maybe not now, and let's hope not. So,
but this is fact. I mean, we are born and we die. This is part of life. This is life. Like, this is why we're here. But, we have to make the best of it. Maybe have a legacy, leave something behind, do something for the world, for society, and then we are gone. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So enjoy your life.
No, I agree. But between doing something for society and enjoying it and dying and not being here, there is maybe a few years, maybe a few decennia of things getting worse. I mean, I'm 51 now. I've been home for 3 weeks now being mildly ill. In times of corona, I know already since a few years that my body is not getting better the way it would be like 20 years ago. So I'm in a phase of my life that I have to start learning, or to start maybe putting into practice the things that I have learned about the fact that everything is passing, and that getting older is not just getting wiser and the climax and then you die. No, it is slowly things will get worse. And the question is, will they only get worse, or will there be other dimensions to it that also can make it worthwhile? And I don't know, for me, this is my personal exploration, but I do see that, I mean, my book, I focus on the personal is political. This is very important thing I learned in the anarchist, squatters, radical left, autonomous movement, but very much actually in the feminist movement. The personal is political was just like, but in the past, well, already maybe also 20 years, slowly but gradually, a spiritual dimension has also become part of it. So what do we do it all about? It's not just about the material world. It's not just about having fun. It's not just about the things I contribute to this outside life. It's also the question, how do I deal with my powerlessness now? How do I deal with the fact that someday I will get ill? How do I deal with the loss of my father last year? He passed away now almost a year ago. How do I deal with the fact that even though I think I see what is wrong in the world and what should change, that all the others don't see the same thing? So how can I live a life of acceptance and at the same time activism? How can I live a life of compassion for myself and for others, even if I see the wrongs that people, including myself, do in this world? So, yeah, I think health is an important part of that, really. And I think taking care is actually the reproduction side of it. Caring for myself and others and being cared for is a very important part of that, of staying healthy. But then there is this question of how can we deal in a healthy way with, or how can we care for the things that are unhealthy? Because they are inevitable. They are.
I'm sorry for asking this, because it's deep. Sometimes it comes to my mind, and then I'm like, oh my god, I don't know. I don't have an answer. I would like to have an answer. I need this answer. But then again, it's just, it's life. And I mean, questions are part of it, right? When I was a kid, I asked myself, why is the sky blue? Why are there clouds? Why is the sun so bright? This is like, and some parents can never answer that question. And some scientists, they don't too. So, but, you know, let's just leave it like that, I would say. We can still think about it. And maybe our audience and the listeners of the podcast will also, you know, think about it. I would like to know, what is your definition of feminism?
Yeah.
Because there was this older definition back in the like 60s, 70s, or even earlier. And then there's like this new definition of feminism, which is, what is feminism now?
Yeah, I'm glad that you asked for my definition, because I can't say there is one definition. Actually, as there is not one man or one woman, we're all diverse and changing, etc. What I really think is a positive development and fascinating now in the past years is that so many initiatives come up under the umbrella of feminism. And there is a wide range, and so many different people and organizations and projects and initiatives and movements call themselves feminist, whereas about 10 years ago, in many places, at least in the Netherlands and in I think the West, or whatever we call the West, the North, felt like, oh, feminism is over now, we don't need it anymore, we achieved everything. And now it's clear that men and women are still not being treated equally. So I think, I knew for my book I had to write down a definition, and it's there, and I invite everyone to have a look.
If you want, you can take it and do research in your own book.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting to explore some of the dimensions. I think the concrete treatment of men and women as equals, and also the preferred outcome of justice is very important. So feminism is for me an analytical tool looking at the world we live in and that we are creating through a gendered lens to see how we create differences between men and women and between masculinity and femininity. And it is also the inspiration for practices, for change in my personal life, for change in organizations, for change in communities, for change in societies and institutions. And then it is very clear that this dimension of social injustice between men and women, femininity, masculinity, is intersecting with so many other inequalities. So it is not one dimension. There is not just one kind of women that is oppressed by one kind of men. There is mechanisms and practices and processes that create all these injustices and unequal treatments, and actually that create the norms and the privileges and the powers. So from my perspective, looking at the role of boys and men and masculinities in the creation and the perseverance of injustice in society is looking at the most privileged groups, because I do think we need to make a change there. It's otherwise we keep the norms intact and we say all the others have to change to become like the norm. But if we leave the norm as it is, I mean, if the norm is to be a white straight male, women and people of color and LGBT persons will never adhere to the norm enough and will never get the equal treatment or the just positions in society, and they will be blamed for not being like the norm. But the norm is the problem.
It's true. It's really true. How about, what does it mean to you when I'm saying women hit harder?
Yeah, I have been reflecting a bit on the title of your podcast, and of course, it's an interesting challenge to meet a female mixed martial artist champion, even. There's different. I mean, maybe it's a good example of how complex all this work is, because in the world as it is, I do believe it's important that men and women have equal treatment, equal access to all positions. But of course, having said what I said before about the role of violence in men's lives, violence is for me something also problematic and very much associated with patriarchy, male dominance, etc. As long as we have an army, I think women should have equal access and possibilities and treatment in the army. But I would prefer there not to be armies and not to be weapons and not to be war and not to be fighting. And then with the fighting, there is an area where I think, oh, but as a hobby, as a sport, as it is nice to, I don't know, to rough and tumble play, etc. I do see the value of such activities. But it raises more questions again for me. And actually now, this is happening a few times now in this podcast. Actually, I think it would be nice to have a podcast myself and to be able to ask you questions.
You can always ask me back. I don't mind. I even want it.
Oh, well, then let me ask, what does it mean to you when you say women hit harder?
It's kind of, yeah, of course, it's the issues that we talked earlier about. I mean, women have to be stronger in that way to prove themselves all the time. It's proving. You have to be better than him. Even Germany has the biggest paying gap of all European countries. Can you believe? Germany, who is so far ahead of, you know, economy and stuff, we have the biggest pay gap between like the genders, and I don't know, women hit harder, you know. Yeah, it's a thing. You always have to prove. I always had to prove in my life I'm capable of doing whatever: judo, fighting, university. MMA, going into the octagon, doing this, doing that. It was always approving. Even with the salary itself, it was like, it's crazy. And then in judo, for example, we had some competitions where the girls and the boys fought together. You cannot believe how bad it was for a guy to lose to me. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah.
They would have. They wished to be, I don't know, they were so embarrassed. They were embarrassed to lose to a girl.
Yeah, of course.
And even still, I mean, in my gym, pretty much everybody is male. Sometimes it's like, I have the feeling there's respect. And then on the other side, it's like, I don't know, not so sure. It's still like, yeah, you're a girl. You're hitting like a girl. You have the power, like one of my coaches says, you have the power of a boy, a power of a man. When we do pad work and stuff, or we do sparring, and he's like, oh my God, if this hand just, it's like a male punch. It's so strong, I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, no, it's clear. I mean,
Actually, it makes me proud. I'm so stupid.
No, but I understand that very, very, I mean, I totally understand that you are, I mean, you're a champion in one of the most archetypical male domains. And you probably hit harder than most men. And the fact that you hit, that you do this is a hit in itself. No, I think it's fascinating. Actually, I think now maybe it's a bit sidetracking, but it's years ago, there was a documentary about a female boxer. The documentary was called A Knockout. And she was a champion boxer. I think she was a boxer. I forgot her name now. But then her career ended because she didn't get any further contracts, because she didn't want to pose in the typical female positions, do commercial shoot. Yeah, I don't know, bikini naked, or just at least for the male gaze thing. It was an interesting documentary, but also shocking about how, I don't know, you don't know the documentary. I'll send it to you.
No, but I will research right now when we
it was, we're done talking. No, so, I mean, I'm not too familiar with the martial arts or mixed martial arts world at all, and I think it's fascinating to get these insights from this gender perspective. So the things that you tell me, they make complete sense, and now I realize that this documentary was there, and then that it is really reshuffling everything people think about is masculine or feminine. Yeah, it's interesting. Thanks.
I'm really, you know, my goal was to give some, you know, some people a voice or overthink their construct, or, you know, if they had the vision or a dream and never were, you know, strong enough to actually do it, they now listen to us and they might get an idea of, yeah, I'm just going to do it now, right now. Like this was the momentum of doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so that'd be nice. That's cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's very clear for me that that men and women, in generally speaking, have different paths to go if we want to reach gender equality, because we have been raised and socialized to perform such different roles and tasks in very different domains. So, but then the strange thing that happens to me actually is that you are a hero of gender equality while you're doing something that I would prefer most men not to go into anymore. So that's a strange thing. Yeah.
But there's a big difference for me, at least, between violence itself and combat sport.
Mm-hmm.
It's really big. I mean, we do martial arts, which is not ballet or whatever. It's not track and field. It is really martial arts, but we are meeting, like, people have this passion, you know, the love for something, and we meet there for the competition and we play with, like, rules and we just do what we love. So we're like a chess player, we're trying to see, to anticipate, to see what could the opponent do, to find gaps, like, you know, it's so complex.
Yeah.
It's not just hitting someone in the face. I mean, it can happen. If there's no defense, it can happen, but it's not what we're aiming for.
Yeah. No, I understand, but I can't isolate what you do there from the rest of society. So, and the world that boys and men grow up in glorifies physical violence to an extent that is really problematic. So
we just have to put them into martial arts. Believe me, they don't want to have violence on the street anymore. If they find out about their power, if they have, you know, they would prefer combat competition.
I understand what you're saying, and I know the theory, and I know in practice this can work, but I also know there is a lot of boys and growing number of girls also going into kickboxing now, which is very popular because they see it as a way of surviving in the streets. So it becomes also part of street fight practices. And I know that in sports you learn to handle your energies and your emotions, and you learn a certain discipline and
code of conduct
and responsibility. I know all that, but
rules, respect to your partners, to your coach, to your gym, to everybody, to your environment. Respect is the most.
I agree. So,
But I mean, we cannot it's there. It's some people, yeah, they decide to do street fights or whatever. We decide to do it in the gym, in the octagon, in like a competition. And
what is an octagon? I heard you say that now.
The octagon is the thing where MMA is taking place.
Ah, okay.
It's in judo, it's the mats, it's the dojo, the dojo.
But it has eight sides or whatever. It's a kind of round. Ah, you see, I really don't know nothing.
It's not so bad. It sounds so much nicer, octagon, than the cage. Cage is so...
Oh, okay. But it, oh, now I think of another movie that was also interesting. So, what's that called? Is it Bruno? No. Never mind. I'll send you some things afterwards when I think of them and find them again.
Okay, sweet. Yeah. We now have to come to an end, which is so
not nice.
I would have liked to continue this forever, but we roundabout just talk about an hour because it's too long otherwise. But the last sentence is yours. If you have something to add or give advice, or which was your key learning in the last year, or I don't know, just a phrase you're using, like which clear your mind of Kant or whatever. Maybe you have something like that.
Well, I don't know. What I would like to say now is to paraphrase your motto and give it as a challenge for men. And there is still then competition involved, which actually I think we should let go of. But okay. Men care softer.
Okay. Jens van Tricht, I thank you so much. And I'm hoping to talk to you in the future and see more of you, because I think this is something really good for the society and for the planet.
Thank you very much. Please, can I ask you something?
Yeah, of course.
We will meet in Amsterdam whenever that's possible, or somewhere else. I'd love to that. But also, I think now it would be interesting for me to watch a game, if you ever come to play a game, a match, or whatever you call that again. I think to get out of my comfort zone.
Of course, we will manage to get you there, to get you there. I was supposed to fight in June in Berlin, but it's postponed to, I don't know, somewhat July. So I'm pretty certain that the next fight I'm doing is in Köln in September.
It's almost Amsterdam.
And then I might fight another thing in Austria at the end of the year.
Okay.
So, but we'll manage to get you there.
Let me know. Yeah. I think
that you are willing to watch, because some people can't.
Oh, no, I think I can, but I don't know. I want to take the challenge now. Yeah.
Yay. So a challenge accepted.
Okay.
And thank you so much. I'm wishing you a great day and all the best.
Schön, dass ihr wieder dabei wart bei Women Hit Harder, dem Female Power Podcast mit mir, Julia Dorni. Und denkt dran, machen ist wie wollen, nur krasser.